going on now?
I know. It was Hector and Jeff.
I'm turning the recorder on just so I don't forget once this meeting starts.
It's really nice.
I've ever stayed at this best hotel. The best hotel Triple SP has ever had.
Oh, really? I really? Tell him to show that.
W1?
Yeah, that will be
fun.
I think it's like
to use this stuff.
I have some paperwork that needs to be signed on the secretary.
She's going to need to get a few signatures.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Nancy wanted to do this too, and then Mara just texted her.
Yeah.
She said that they were.
I told her not to worry about it because I think we're not in that
problem. Okay.
But we need more traction.
Person, you want to take one and pass them over? Are you going to leave it to the next person? And I'll ask them. I'm going to miss Ray because he has.
We need a.
And then she can pass them around from. Okay.
Well, we,
I miss Ray.
We make a review in case we.
Well, I need
to take a copy of this back.
I need it.
Copy of this.
No,
I think
since I started the crap over email, I might as well make sure that it's clear.
Yeah, we have to put it out there.
And then I gotta make sure Nancy follows up if I forget. I'm gonna miss Ray Michalowski with all this long motion. But he really. That's why I him too. Just, that's what's happening.
He's fabulous. He's been in school since the third week of school.
But he's now taller than he was. Well, I can imagine.
Yeah, that's true.
He is. He's getting the height.
He loves being taller than mom.
Don't they all?
Shoots like the ASA, because the ASA is
I could look up for a new job. some job that'll help me start school right after Labor Day. But I'm finding out there's no luck.
If it's school is on the quarters,
yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. It used to be like that, but not anymore. When did you start, Susan?
September 8th.
Where are you at?
Western Michigan University. I have to go here and see for myself.
Okay, as soon as there's a job opening, call me.
Okay.
Is that
interesting? We're on what they call Texas semesters.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like 14 classes in one final exam.
Okay.
And then we have two summer sessions that are 7.5 weeks.
Oh.
So you actually have the year divided up into 15 weeks long.
I think that's us too, because we're now only 14 weeks, and the 15 week is the exams, and then there's two summer sessions. So we're pretty much like you guys.
But you start early. You must get out early.
We do. We get out at the end of April.
Well, we get out at the end of April. In December, though.
Yeah, we get out later in December, like the 21st or something like that, or the 20th.
Yeah, you start earlier than we do.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how they figured out the schedule. Yes. I don't know if you've heard our provost. They let our provost go for, I think you might have heard about it. We had Homeland Security on our campus because there was a problem with visa for the international student program. And then someone thought that he might be laundering money as well. Simply because they couldn't find out where the money was going. Yeah, it's a total upheaval. It's a total upheaval. Anyway, they're still trying to find out who's who, you know?
Back in your neck of the woods.
Like, kind of
in
Chicago.
And then I'm casting summer
with spring. In soap or what? We just hired a guy to do this degree, and so
Thank you.
Yeah, but.
They are. That's a brother for you.
Yeah.
Okay, they don't have signs.
Yeah.
Give them some time.
This is freeze right through. I tell you, I wanted this thing. It's so hard to make.
All right, nice to see you. I feel like I've been in such contact.
I didn't know. I'm just so
scared. It probably cut itself off. There it is. I figured it out. Okay. Okay, everybody. If everyone's ready, I want to call our meeting to order. Okay. Everybody's ready? And at first, I'd like to have everybody introduce themselves. I think we all know each other, but if we could go around the table one more time, that'd be great.
Sure. I'm Glenn Mushard. I'm the secretary, and I'm going to pass around a sign-in sheet just for the record so I can make sure I get everybody's name right. Thanks.
Susan Carlson, treasurer. Claire Renzetti, chair of the Budget, Finance, and Audit Committee. I'm only here for a very short time.
The troublemaker.
But I go into another meeting right now.
Nancy Messi, Vice President.
I'm Catherine Motney. I'm a student representative.
I'm Santiago, past president, but I'm also now at Michigan State.
Okay. I'm Dave Smith.
I'm Ronnie Steinberg, I'm Vice President-elect, I'm retired from Vanderbilt University.
I'm Cheryl Woodrow, Board of Directors, and I'm at Grand Valley, next door.
Okay.
Hello, I'm Antoine Jones, from George Washington University, Board of Directors representing.
Hi, I'm Keith Kilty. I'm a professor emeritus at Ohio State, actually back on the contract there for various things. Can't really escape. I discovered that. Member of the board.
Heather Dolmage, and I'm at Roosevelt University at 400 South Michigan.
I'm John Dale. I'm at George Mason.
Shannon Monnet, I'm the chair of the Council of Divisions. This is my last year. I'm at Penn State.
Pamela Quiros, and I guess I'm editor of Social Problems.
Maurice Durr, President. All right, I'd like to adopt our agenda unless anyone has any revisions. Can I get somebody to make a motion that we adopt the agenda?
I move we adopt.
Somebody second?
I'll second.
Okay, all right. Questions? Abstentions? Okay, the agenda has been adopted. Glenn, you're up.
Okay, well, every year I provide bedtime reading for everyone to get to sleep. So I'm sure you've all had a chance to read the minutes from the last meeting, the last board meeting, so I don't see a need to go through. But if there are any issues or questions anyone has, this is certainly a good time to bring it up.
Thank you. No questions? The next.
We need to approve the minutes.
I need to approve.
Is there a move? Is there a motion?
To vote to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? Except that we can move on. All right, announcements for the 2015 general election report. Collector?
You have the election results there. The president-elect is Donnie Matanowski, Vice President Valerie Leiter, Secretary Glenn, and Treasurer, new Treasurer, the first time a little while, and then Professor Gladwood. New Board of Directors are Louis Espanza, Noah Windsor. Board of Directors, Student Representative Casey Hendricks, Budget Finance and Audit Committee, Nancy Messi, Committee of Committees, Beverly Mayberry and Deborah Potter, Editorial Publication Committee, Valerie Jeanette and Ana Maria Santiago, Membership and Outreach Committee, Rachel Allison and Jenny Beeman, and then finally, Membership and Outreach Committee, the student rep, Janelle Tom. Congratulations to all of them.
So there's no action to the report, so we don't have to approve it or accept it. All right. Okay. All right. Gee. Now there's a report from Claire Renzetti, or actually Susan. All right. I'm sorry. I skipped Susan.
Okay.
All right. Money matters. I won't keep my clothes like that. All right, Susan Carlson. All right.
Okay. You have your treasurer's report in your packet. I won't belabor it too long, but I have very good news to share. In 2014, the society's net assets increased by over $145,000. I think that's the largest surplus that we have had in my memory. And my memory goes back a long time. I've been on the budget committee since 1993, so that tells you something. Okay, in terms of, and there are a variety of reasons for that I spell out and I won't go over, but both, we did really well on the income side. Revenues were up in many categories, but expenses were down too, and I think we have to give our administrative officer and her staff a lot of credit. And also, Michelle, as our meeting manager, we are now actually generating profits on our meetings instead of subsidizing them heavily as we have in the past, and you can see the detail in some of the other materials you have. So there's a lot of congratulations to go all the way around. Actually, I just came out of our BFA committee meeting, and I have a revision to make. We are actually projecting a surplus now of $56,285, and Claire is going to share some aspects of that with you in a few minutes. And actually, I anticipate it will be a larger increase than that surplus, because that does not include our investment in income and unrealized net gains on assets, and the market is doing really well right now. So I think we're going to have another banner year. As your investment advisor, and I will step back to be just the investment advisor after this meeting, I have included a lot of information here on our investment portfolio and the performance of our socially responsible mutual funds, as well as the certificates of deposit that we hold with community development financial institutions, around the country. These are certificates of deposit that don't make us a lot of money, but they do a tremendous amount of good for low-wealth communities. And as investment advisor, I try to select ones that are fulfilling the mission of CDFIs that really do a lot to provide financial services to communities that do not have other access, provide educational opportunities for individuals in those areas, provide home loans, car loans, micro loans, and so forth. And right now, we're going to have a shift. I recommended the Latino Community Credit Union in North Carolina as being our next investment. Its target is the immigrant community in general, and they have, you can read it, you have the information in your packet, but they've done a fantastic job the last 15 years. For a credit union to only be in existence for 15 years and now offering home loans is amazing, nothing short of amazing. And the budget committee approved that recommendation, and so we will now have a 3-year investment with that institution. I provided you with some colorful graphs of our investment performance. The funds are doing well in the ways that they're supposed to in terms of offsetting each other's strengths and weaknesses. And because we've had several really great years and a huge increase in our net assets, one of the things I proposed at our June meeting in Laverne, California, to the Budget Committee was that we use some of these reserve funds to do increased good works of the society. Specifically, I recommended something that the board has talked about for a long time wanting to do, which was increase the number of minority scholarships that we offer. And I proposed increasing them to 2 and increasing the stipend from $12,000 to $15,000 apiece. The second thing I recommended was increasing the Thomas C. Hood Social Action Award from $1,000, which has been forever. I can't remember when it changed, somewhere back in the 90s maybe. And increasing that to $5,000 because I feel like these community organizations are doing just such great work, and $1,000 really isn't a lot of money anymore. And thirdly, there's way more need among our students for travel funds to the meeting. And I proposed increasing the Lee Student Support Fund from $11,000 to $15,000. The Budget Committee agreed with these recommendations. There's no, you don't have to take any action now. This will come forward with the 2016 budget, and I believe that will be on Sunday. But I just wanted to inform you about that. There may be other ways as well that we want to talk about. Finally, the review of the annual audit. Our auditing firm in Knoxville, Tennessee, Lattimore, Black, Morgan, and Payne, conducted its annual audit of the Society's financial statements. Their representatives, Bill Kelso, who's a partner, and Lawrence Alexander, who's manager, reviewed and discussed the findings of the audit with our committee over a conference call. There were no unusual findings. They said our society is in good health financially. They were complimentary about our choice of Oxford University Press. And they also informed us of some changes that might be coming down the road by regulatory agencies for nonprofits, but we already meet these new standards pretty much already, so there are no concerns there. And the board needs to vote on the second and well motion from the BFA committee to approve the audit. And that concludes my report. Are there questions?
So in terms of the recommendations, are those recommendations that the BFA would then bring forward to the board?
Yes, it's built into the 2016 budget, and so the board will approve or not approve those when they consider the 2016 budget, and I think that is on Sunday morning. So the board does it.
I just want to thank you for that, this work.
Oh, you're welcome.
The informed presentation of your report, and I find it very impressive, the work that you've done.
Thank you.
So thank you.
Appreciate it.
I have a little question about the social responsibility investment funds that you're working with here. I'm curious, not about this one in particular, but out of a general sort of research interest that I have in these as well. How did the SSSP decide among various socially responsible investments?
Well, when I came onto the committee, I was selected to the committee in 1993, and one of my goals was to be sure that the society's investments were socially responsible. And at the time, we were doing business with Merrill Lynch, who was making very bad advice in terms of the investments they were suggesting and the values of the society. And so I did a lot of research. I have a dad who is amazing with investments. And so I learned from him a great deal, and I give him a lot of credit for that. And I use kind of the principles he taught me to kind of sift through. I have actually a piece I wrote for the newsletter I'd be happy to send to you, where I go through all the various criteria, the difference between a true socially responsible fund and a not true socially responsible fund. It's a pretty much too much to go into now, but I will make a note to send you that. But there are financial criteria as well as social criteria that go into making those decisions, and I research the funds and continue to do the same thing, which is why we have a diversification into three funds now. We started with a PACS fund, and we've diversified based on, at the time, some of the funds didn't have enough of a track record, in my opinion, to make investments. But now they do. And so the Parnassus funds have performed exceptionally well, especially the core equity fund. I'm very impressed with that investment. But there's a whole host of things that go into that. And I always bring forward my recommendations to the budget committee, and they make the decision. I don't vote on that, even as treasurer.
Okay, there's no action on this. I take it until Sunday, based on your report.
On that part.
Right.
We have to approve the audit.
Okay. Will someone move to approve the audit?
It's seconded already from the budget committee, so they just have to vote.
Okay, no discussion. Pat, let's move on. All right, now is it your turn, Claire?
So let me begin by saying that one of the true pleasures of serving on the Budget Finance and Audit Committee is working with Susan Carlson, who always makes me look good because she's just so good at what she does. We have really been fortunate to have such an excellent treasurer, and I'm just thrilled that she's staying on as our investment advisor. The financial health of the society is due in large part to Susan's tremendous work.
Well, the market helps too.
But you know what to do. You know what to do. You know what to do with it. And many people don't have that skill. And so we really appreciate all the work you've done. I especially appreciate it. I assume that you all have in front of you the 2015 budget and revised budget as of June 5th, 2015, is that correct? Anybody else has this? Okay, I'm gonna go over some things that you don't have, but you can look down and you can see the numbers, and I'm just gonna do the highlights and fill in some things that based on information from this morning's Budget, Finance, and Audit Committee, and then you can ask questions if you'd like. So the first thing I want to highlight with regard to revenue is membership dues. It's going to come in a little lower than anticipated, and that appears to be due to the fact that some people are not renewing their memberships as they should. This is an issue that probably the board should take up at some time. I understand, Glenn, you were going to, is it Glenn who's going to?
I haven't asked him yet for this year. So thanks, Claire. Keep waiting.
So, Glenn, I understand.
I guilt people into it.
Well, you know, sometimes the personal touch matters to get people to reply. But there are people who, you know, are on the program or who are involved in the society who haven't renewed their membership yet. So it's something that really is very important. That's going to come in a little bit lower than anticipated. However, a big piece of that surplus that Susan mentioned has to do with revenue from the annual meeting. And I want to thank Marlies and your program committee for doing such a great job. We will see a substantial increase in the revenue from the annual meeting this year. Michelle gave us a figure of $131,000 this morning, so it's quite good. I think it speaks to the fact that Marlies and her program committee worked very hard to get people to come to Chicago. I believe, did you say it's the second largest in terms of pre-registration? So it's really exciting.
Can't beat that Richard and David.
Huh?
I said, we just can't beat Richard and David. We were in New York.
I want to move us ahead then to, I have nothing else to say about revenue, but if we could go to expenses and go over to the journal. So Pamela has a new job at the University of Houston. Congratulations. And so the editorial office has moved to the University of Houston. And Pamela and Hector and Michelle and Susan and at least a lot of us have worked hard to make sure that at least financially this is good for the society, and it really is. Pamela and Hector and our legal consultant Miriam have negotiated a very good package for the society. We still don't have signed contracts, but it's still being worked on. But this will not negatively impact the society's budget. And in fact, I think there's a lot of good that's coming out of it. Pamela, we wish you well in your new job. Also, if you look at the annual meeting expenses, not only is revenue up, but like usual, Michelle has worked very hard to save money wherever she can. And so she was able to get some expense reductions for us. And so that's helped us, too, in terms of contributing to the surplus. So as Susan said, it looks like we're going to have a surplus of about $56,285 this year, which is really good news. We are healthy financially as a society. Those of us who have been involved in Triple SP for a long time know that the poor treasurer and BFA chair weren't always able to make such cheery reports, but it's nice to be able to do that. Does anybody have any questions for me? Okay. We have to.
I need to approve the revised budget.
Okay, so can we have a motion to approve the revised budget?
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Great.
Thank you.
Is there anything else I have to do?
I think you went over everything. Now it's Hector's turn.
This is your 2016.
Your turn?
Okay.
Yeah.
No, this is the 2016.
Okay.
2016.
You have the report, right? The executive report. As always, I start by thanking the board.
privilege of serving. And I really mean that sincerely. I don't have to tell you about the staff, about Michelle, and everybody else who works in all of this. It makes life so easy in the sense, right? To have the kind of relationship we do. We talk almost every day, right? We talk a lot. We're in touch all the time. So the, you know, my being in California and Michelle being in Tennessee, I don't think it's had any impact at all. I mean, it's worked out very well. The annual, the next part of my report here is on the annual meeting, and you've heard enough about it already to know that it looks great. I mean, and I want to thank Marta Lise and David and Banana for the great job that they did. I remember when Michelle and I came out here looking for hotels. I mean, this, I think, turned out this was easily the best choice. And coming back, it's a great hotel. I mean, I think it's going to, it's a good choice for us. The theme this year, I don't think, could have been better, right, considering what's happened in this country just in the last year alone. I mean, who could have anticipated, right? Couldn't be the theme. And then I'm thinking ahead to next year's in Seattle with David as the president at a time that we're becoming much more international. When you see, for example, the OUP report that they're going to give, already we can see that the journal, you know, the reach is much more than it's ever been. In fact, one of the ones we were looking at was, you know, Nepal. We have 295, which I think is pretty much everybody in Nepal. It's reading. It's really extraordinary. So it's a perfect time, just as it was a perfect time for Marta Lise to be present. I think it's a perfect time for David, given David's research and focus on international issues. So that's worked out really nicely. So I'm really looking forward to that. And Seattle is a great city as well as, you know, as Chicago is. So. The journal, you already know that the journal basically is in the process of moving, and in effect has moved to Houston. I've been very pleased with the issues that have come out with the draft the research, right, that you see reflected in the journal. I've been very happy with that. The amount of work really that went into this transition was really pretty enormous, right? But I think what was especially good was the way everybody worked together. I should mention Mary Bernstein, the chair of the E&P committee, was great. There was a period of time there where I think we talked every day, say with Pamela, to make this happen. And we gave you an update at a couple of points, I think, to let you know. And I think the membership probably has no clue, and they should really, right? Because it's really, in one sense it's a big deal, but in another sense it really isn't, right? Because the way it's worked out, there's been no interruption to the journal, for example, which is a key thing, right? And we can find a way of doing it. I think we've managed to do that, to make that transition. So we're really looking forward to that. Houston is really pretty excited about having the journal. I think they see it as a real feather in their cap, right, to have the journal there. You know about the impact factor that went up. Basically, the impact factor gives you an idea, right, for the last 2 years. But nevertheless, it's a potential improvement over a short period of time. And I think we're going to see it at least remain very steady or even improve. Just looking at the articles that we're seeing in the journal now, I think it's going to... I think that the areas that are covered by the people who are publishing, there is much broader. So I think the impact factor, if anything, is starting to improve, I think, over a period of time. The transition from University of California Press to UP Press, I think, was seamless, really. It's great. And we're really very happy with Oxford University Press. Again, you'll get a report, and I think you'll have a similar reaction. Apart from everything else, they're just a pleasure to work with. Right? They're incredibly professional, but at the same time, on a personal level, it's really great. Because sometimes, you know, when you get somebody who's very polished, very professional, you give up a little bit on the personal side. Right here, we don't give anything up on either side. It's really a really good relationship, very warm relationship. We did a membership survey update, a membership survey. Keith is going to report on that later, Keith Johnson, to the board, I guess it would be on Sunday, on what we found. Some interesting, you know, interesting stuff. There's something that we hope to keep doing on an ongoing basis as well. The contract with the university, this would be a good transition to the next thing that I'm supposed to do. The contract with the University of Tennessee, the contract runs out. And so I think we're going to be going to see on December 31st, 2016, next year runs out. So the coming year, we're going to be visiting Tennessee, the permanent organization committee, and two the chair of the committee and one other member, which very likely might be Claire, I think, right? Are going to go out. Michelle will be there. I'll go out as well. To Ed Pat, the new treasurer, Pat Donnelly. So we're going to negotiate, hopefully, for another 5 years. Right. Now, and the relationship's been great with Tennessee. I know the Department of Sociology there is very happy to have the relationship with the journal, and not just with the journal, the organization, and the journal, of course. So anyway, that's basically my report. I went through it rather quickly since I know we have a lot of other business. Should I go ahead and move to the next thing, or maybe somebody may have a question about the executive officer report?
I just want to ask one question.
Sure.
And I just want to make sure I understood. When I was going through it, the editor search, do we have an upcoming editor search that fall?
Yeah, I didn't know. I guess I missed that part. Yeah, we're going to be, as soon as you get an editor, it's like shortly after you start conducting the new search for the next one. I sometimes wonder if maybe tenure should be 4 years instead of three, but it's a tenure issue.
For the editor, better ask the editor.
That's what I said, that I kind of leaned a little bit. I'm sure. But in any event, this is actually going to be rather interesting. I'm glad you mentioned it, Marlies, because I think, you know, there's always ways you can improve searches, and I think we're doing things to do that. And the board, in fact, has played a part in, you know, has approved a number of changes, right? But there's another issue that came up. We've brought it up in the past, most recently, I guess Dave brought it up, right? In the past, there was a time when institutions were dying to have the journals. That may not be the case anymore, right? Especially, I think in one sense they are. They'd like to be affiliated, right? They don't want to pay for it, basically, right? That's what changed more than anything. So I think that one of the things in the next search that we're going to have to do, that the board's going to have to decide, is how much they're going to require, right, of an institution,
right?
And how much room will they, right, put up in order to get a good pool, right? We experienced some of that in the last search. We were very lucky to get the editor that we got, right? But I don't know if we're going to get that lucky all the time, right? Because we had a small pool last time. Anytime you have a small pool, right, you run that risk, right, of not getting, you know, a strong editor. And so we really have to think seriously about when we want to run that risk. So the board's going to have to make some decisions about what we're willing to, you know, to spend versus what we require the university to put into it. Okay? Anyway, with any other questions on the, and I'm glad you raised it. Okay. Should I go ahead and go? John Scheffner, he's the head of the Department of Sociology, and he gave a report. I don't know if you have a chance to look at the report. Basically, he reiterates, right, the relationship that we've had with Tennessee is one that they value a great deal as we do. And he writes in his report, he's really enjoyed working with us. He works mainly with Michelle. I don't have that much contact with him, but from now on, I have in the past. Now, one of the issues that has come up, that it's not something that the board really has to address right now because we're still sort of gathering information, is that we have a contract with Tennessee where we provide the department a certain amount of money, right? We have also graduate students that we support, but also Tennessee in the contract that we have with them is supposed to provide tuition for that student. And the money that we give to the department really wasn't for tuition, it was money that just went directly to the department. John Scheffner's report says that they never got that tuition money. This is the first we've heard of it. So we have to look into that, first of all, to see what the situation is. And so what he's doing is he's making a request because they didn't get that 6,000, so they used the 11,000 that we gave them. Total tuition, he wants now, in addition to that, you know, money for tuition. And so we're going to be meeting with him, I think it's Saturday, is it? I think, with John, to go over this. And then once we have more information about what the situation is, right? Because basically, he's right. If we haven't, if Tennessee has not provided the tuition, they actually are in breach of a contract. In effect, right. Now, if that's the case, what do we do about that? That's, you know, that's another question, right, of course. It's in the report. I wanted to address it. And then I guess on Sunday we'll have more to report to the board on that issue to see if there's an action item, in fact, for the board at that point. But the BFA is on it. You know, we're addressing it. We're going to be meeting with John. Okay?
Hopefully, yeah. All I want to do is hopefully we can resolve this. I remember last year we had the same discussion.
Yeah.
No, this same. Isn't spillover discussion. This is another.
It's pretty the same.
It's the same ongoing discussion, but we thought the best thing to do. So we're employing now of trying to find out. The first thing we have to know is exactly, because, you know, I don't think this is between us, right? But I'm not, you know, we're not 100% convinced because they didn't provide tuition during that period of time.
Well, 2006. Right. Yeah. Since 2006.
Since 2006, right?
That's
Yeah, no, it seems odd, right? You know, some of it seems odd enough for us to want to look into it. And then once we have all the information we need, accurate information, then at that point the board then can make an informed decision. Right? Okay. But right now it really is, you know, we're more, you know, getting information than anything.
I just raised it again to have people, because I remember it, we all talked about it. Hector's right to report it to everybody to keep it in front of us again. But hopefully when we do this, we can finally put this.
Yeah, hopefully together. Saturday will go a long way to helping us do that.
Okay.
Well,
right.
that's 10 years worth of tuition.
He's right, yeah. I mean, yeah. And apparently they used the other money to pay for the tuition, which was not the intent, right? But we'll see.
How can you let something go that far? Okay. I think we're moving kind of fast.
We are moving very fast, which is wonderful. David and Bond and I are getting the reason for it.
To 2 o'clock. So if it's okay, would you like to see your report?
I would love to.
All right.
Let's hear it for at least keep
moving. I'll try it.
Well, you have a copy of my report, and I give. The first thing that I really want to point out and emphasize is how strong our attendance is coming into the conference. We have 916 attendants registered, so anything people will be registering on site, I'm really hoping our number will end around 950 is what we projected in the budget. So this will be the second highest attended conference. I started collecting the data back in 1985. That's as far back as I can find records. So we have 176 sessions scheduled, and I broke down how those papers and all will be distributed amongst those sessions. We have 15 guests registered. Those 15 guests are not included in the 916. That's just if someone would like to come with a registrant to attend some sessions, they receive their name only on a name badge, and just that way they can attend sessions, which really goes in a long way of just having more attendees. We had six accessible requests, and those requests included wheelchair accessibility and conference name badges for partners or personal care attendants who are accompanying attendees and assisting them. This hotel was built and opened on November 1st, 2011, so there's no grandfather clauses. It's completely ADA compliant. So, you know, we should not encounter, you know, any issues. And I think, too, you know, the way the meeting space is on the certain side of the hotel, we will be utilizing, based on the program growth, we will be utilizing some rooms on the second and the third floor. The second floor, we will be using the theater room for the comfort zone on Saturday and Sunday. And then on the third floor, and you'll want to retain this because we hope to see you at tonight's arrival meet and greet reception, and then tomorrow evening welcoming reception will be in the outdoor terrace, and the weather's supposed to be wonderful, and that is on the third floor of the hotel. So downstairs you have level one, this is level two, where the majority of the meeting space is, but then if you go over in the guest towers, you would get off on the second or the third floor. And then, so we have signage because we're going to have to override security as far as non-hotel guests gaining access. So I've worked with the hotel, and you know they've been very easy to work with and accommodating all of our needs. One issue that we tend to face when we negotiate contracts is getting a gender-neutral restroom. And the general manager of this property even allowed us to put the language in the contract. So what we've done is we've taken the men's restroom on the Atlantic Ballroom level, which is level one, and so that will be used as gender neutral. So, and then several years ago, the accessibility committee really moved and encouraged SSSP to have a comfort zone. And basically what that is just a meeting space for those that are or are not staying on property to be able to go to if they just need some time away or if they need to prepare. And when we negotiated the contract, we are the only group in-house, so we are utilizing all of the meeting space. But then when the call for papers went out and we received so many submissions, we needed more space, which is something we've been encountering for the past few years. So what we did was we gave the room that was set aside for the comfort zone, and we've just sort of made space within the hotel, but we're utilizing that room for actual meeting space. As far as paying meeting room rental, our room pickup is phenomenal. We exceeded our room block, and part of that is due to our low room rate. When we negotiated the contract, we always try to get as many concessions as possible. And what a concession is, so like if you're an officer, SSSP will provide your and cover your hotel stay. So we try to get as many reduced rates, as many upgrades, and then for the board of directors, then we're able to offer those concessions directly to you. And so, and most hotels are more than happy to provide, but this hotel, Hector and I, we wanted more. And so we were able to get them to agree to a clause regarding our rate be 5% less than ASA's lowest rate. And so when we negotiated the contract, our single double rate was 209, triple 234, and quadruple 259. But when ASA posted their rates, I was like, oh, great. So I went back to the hotel, and we did an addendum to the contract where we were able to get our single double rate down to 185.25. And then, of course, you know, lower triple and quad rates. And so that really is to our advantage, and we're able to pass those savings along to the attendees. And, you know, there are a lot of associations meeting at this time, and, you know, what we've found is, you know, everybody's very savvy these days. So other association members, you know, stay at our hotel. And so all I can suggest is book early. I've already been in conversations with the Seattle property. David and I have already set up our final site visit. We'll be doing that in November. And so when we get back following our vacation, we will go ahead and advertise those rates. So again, you know, be thinking about making a reservation for next year. So our room pickup as of August the 4th was 831 rooms. And so there's a clause in our contract that we receive one complimentary room night for every 40 rooms booked. And so we will receive 21 complimentary room nights. So in essence, those rooms will then be taken and used to reduce the cost that the society would incur. In addition, this particular brand of hotel offers complimentary internet, not only in the guest room, but also in the meeting space. And that is just a concession they offer to all hotel guests. even non-guests. So if you're not staying here and you're attending a session, you can log in. So we know our attendees will appreciate that. And then in addition to keeping costs down, because as you recall, last year's board of directors approved to discontinue the awards banquet. And so this year, I'm really excited about the awards ceremony, and then we will have the division-sponsored reception. But so what that means from a society standpoint is when we had the banquet, you had to purchase your banquet ticket. So a portion of that catering cost was subsidized by attendees. So when you discontinue that, that means the society will incur all catering charges. So we pushed hard and got a $30,000 food and beverage minimum. And we got them to agree to give us a 10% discount on catering pricing. And then a 3% credit off of total catering. But what I'm most proud of is, you know, when you go to a hotel, you need coffee. And coffee here is $120 plus per gallon. So we were able to negotiate coffee at $50 inclusive, which I know you're thinking, wow. But again, that is a huge savings. And, you know, as we have coffee break hours, and it just makes the attendees, they're happier when they have coffee and hot tea. So, yeah, so, you know, the hotel has been, they were very eager to get our business, and then as a result, you know, I always say, you know, in the administrative office, we can work as hard, but when it comes to the point, we have to pass everything off to the hotel, and it's up to them. And my contact has been Kim Enderley, and she has, she's been with the property for a number of years, but she's been in the industry for much longer. It has very good rapport with the staff, and so Marlise Hector and I, we had a pre-con meeting this morning, and we went, it's called a big banquet event order for each room, for each catering. I mean, we went through all 130-some of those. So, I mean, there's just so much behind the scenes, and really, as an attendee, you don't need to know. You just need to come and have a good conference experience. So, but from my standpoint, they have been very easy to work with. So taking all that into catering, the society will spend approximately $45,000 on food and beverage. Now, if you notice in under annual meeting expenses for catering, it's only $30,000. Part of that is due to like the new member breakfast that we have. That falls within the membership committee's budget. Like when the Budget, Finance, and Audit Committee, editorial publications, you know, when certain committees meet and they may have continental breakfast or a box lunch, all the board of directors meals, they come out of different line items in the budget. So when you look at reception and catering, that's not the total expense of all the catering. So I just wanted to point that out. And then, you know, we work really hard to have advertisements in the program, and this year we were able to secure 2,500 plus in advertising revenue. I can't commend the board enough for last year when the problem that we always encounter is getting people to register. And you voted to change the registration deadline date from July 1 to June 1. And I mean, we still, I think you also went and you wanted us to send at least 3 targeted email reminders. Well, of course, we did a whole lot more because you don't want to remove someone from the program. But so the June 1st deadline date, our office sent multiple reminders. David and Vandana sent emails, 2 emails to urging program participants. And then what we do is we contact the session organizers because they are more likely to read that email because they think it's pertaining to their session. And we had them contact. But when all was said and done, on July 17th, I removed 24 program participants from the program, and I took them out. Now, of course, I send them emails letting them know that I took them out, and I also CC the session organizer. So even if, I mean, like this morning, you know, people still drop, there's emergencies, et cetera, but I always try to inform the session organizer, you know, just so they aren't expecting these people. So, and then it was last week, I did hear from one of those 24, and she said she had been traveling, and it wasn't her policy to register until she got on site, and she was pleading, basically, to be added back to the program, and so we had already closed online registration, but she did join. She was not even a member, so she joined, and I consulted with David and Vonda, and so we added her back to the program. So I'm thinking, again, you know, it may take a few years, but people will, you know, really adhere to that June 1st deadline. Another important item is the mobile app. The Board of Directors approved last year, and that we would look into that, and Sharon Shoemaker, our IT specialist, again, our staff in the admin office, I can't speak highly enough of them, but Sharon's background is computer science, so she put together a very detailed report and distributed it to the board before December 31st last year. And so the board approved signing with Crowd Compass, and we signed a two-year agreement with them. And so we announced the mobile app, and currently 267 registrants have downloaded the app, which is about 29%, and the average usage is about 10 to 15%. So we've, you know, we've more than exceeded that. And so what she's going to be doing is you can do these notifications. And so those that haven't downloaded the mobile app, each day, you know, they'll be reminded. And then outside of each meeting room, we've got some color flyers. You know, again, it will just take a few years before the attendees catch on. But, you know, we were very, because we've been hearing that in surveys, you know, we needed more. So we were able to deliver that. And then Marlise knows people. And so when we were here to do the site visit, she was like, well, why do we do these tours? You know, why don't we work with ASA? And so she called Kareem and Jenkins, who is the director of meeting services. And so they agreed to co-sponsor four tours with us. Now, based on their regulations and requirements, you know, they, like us, had very strict guidelines. They said that we would get to receive all of the revenue. And we would only be allowed 10 tickets per tour, and the charge would be $35. And so that would be all revenue coming to the society. And, I mean, they worked out all the logistics. We've got charter buses and a charter trolley coming up. There are two tours on Saturday, two on Sunday. That's all been arranged. We'll pick people up. Unfortunately, due to low ticket sales for two of the tours, ASA was going to have to cancel it. Well, I talked with Hector, and because, you know, really they were being very generous to us, and so we subsidized the tours by a little over $400. So that way, all four tours, we didn't have to do refunds. People still be able to go. So I don't know if this will continue. You know, I don't know if ASA will see this as a positive relationship, but, you know, we typically aren't able to offer that many tours, you know. But so it's been very positive. So, Marlise, thank you.
Bill Bilby was also instrumental because he was the tour person, and I kind of knew him, and I kind of asked him, and he kind of asked Paula, and Paula said, okay. It went around like that, and I think it's a pretty healthy kind of thing. I think, you know, I do have some for Kareem. I didn't forget that. You know, I failed other stuff. To say thank you to him and see if we could get that going, simply because we were having difficulty with buses, getting local transportation. As hard as Nancy Michaels tried, we just couldn't get it. So it's going to be really nice. We don't pay any transportation costs. They just have the bus, if I'm getting this right. Their bus comes and gets us, we get on, we get off. So it was a
good thing. And they took care of all the logistics.
They took care of all of the logistics.
Which is very nice, because, I mean, it's just a lot of work to get contracts in place. But our local arrangements team had spent a lot of time and energy identifying these. They had identified three of these tours. And then, so we were able to pass on that information to ASA. So it was really a team effort. And I do hope they view it as positive and something that we could possibly consider. Again, it's just to enhance the conference experience.
I would love to.
Yes, we do still have some tickets for sale.
Yeah.
Also, as far as the awards ceremony, just to remind the board of what you had approved, we will be recognizing all 22 division student paper competition winners. And we created a new line item in the budget for 2015, and that is to provide a annual meeting registration, membership dues, and a plaque. It has always bothered me that these graduate students didn't receive a plaque. You know, they did get recognized. And so Douglas Oser, our GRA and webmaster, he's put together, he reached out to them. We have pictures for those that turned in pictures. And, I mean, it's truly going to be a PowerPoint presentation to where, you know, they will really receive recognition and then also will receive a plaque. One division couldn't agree upon one winner, so they selected two. But that division chair paid the cost for the winner because we held firm to the policy. And Shannon, I'm quite confident that when you meet with division chairs, some of them expressed concern that we weren't recognizing the outstanding scholarship winners, we weren't recognizing the honorable mentions. But again, you know, we have 45 minutes set aside for all of these presentations. So we encouraged the divisions to recognize these winners, honorable mentions of their divisional meeting. So you know, I think it will be very positive. In addition, we will be recognizing all of our major award winners. And then we also, of our major awards, we also recognize the honorable mentions. So, and there will be plaques for all winners, honorable mentions for the major awards. And all of this was handled through the administrative office. So it took a lot of work from the division chairs, you know, so they just don't have to worry about that one aspect. On Monday, August 24th, we will have a conference by the International Coalition Against Sexual Harassment. And then there will be a workshop by the Institutional Ethnography Division. And again, this is meeting space that Hector and I negotiated, and they put forward requests, and last year's board approved. We were trying to have an additional conference, but due to a number of circumstances, so those will be the only two. And then Marlise's institution, the executive vice president for planning, contributed $2,000 toward this year's conference. Sage Journal, Critical Sociology, contributed $1,000. And that money will be used to for program activities. And then, of course, Oxford University Press, they contribute $3,000 to our conference bags. So in addition to the money that we receive from OUP, that this is something that they do separate. So we're very excited about that. So, and then, you know, finally, the registration workers that will be working downstairs. We have 7 graduate students and 3 other individuals that will be paid an hourly wage, but they work 12 hours. In exchange for that, they get a shared hotel room for 3 nights of the conference. So they get to stay on property. And then we tend to ask, you know, each year the people that work, and we've had a very positive relationship, and they would like to work the following year. So we've got a good group of registration workers. So, you know, this past year has been, I mean, we've dealt with a lot of issues. It's been a lot of hard work, but, you know, Marlise, David and Bondina, Nancy Michaels, you know, Hector and I mean, you know, Hector tells hard. But I'm going to finish. One of the reasons we always are in daily communication is because he is an early riser. So typically before 8 o'clock, we've usually had 2 to 3 exchanges. So, you know, the time difference, it's never been an issue. And it's just, it makes my job so much easier to be supported by such wonderful people. And I can't say enough about the admin team. I mean, we've we each have different strengths, but I think we come together and, you know, I've always thought of this position as being here to serve. So it's a privilege to serve. I look forward to working with David for next year's conference, and just to thank you, the Board of Directors, for the time and energy that you give so freely. I mean, that enables Hector and I to do our jobs, so thank you. Any questions?
So I am wondering, this is the second largest. Chicago's an awesome city. You've got low rates on the hotel room. Has anybody done research about what are the variables that are associated with higher membership or higher registration at the conference and not?
Well, there are certain cities. Like Atlanta is not a good city.
What do you mean for the meeting?
For the
Atlanta. Change the name.
So that, you know, there are some cities that are big draws. I think there are a number of factors, you know, because honestly, going into this year's meeting with the lateness, you know, there was some concern that, you know, attendance may be down, but that has not been the case. You know, ASA, they just announced the dates in the conference hotel and city, so we're not involved in, I don't know what goes into the formula. You know.
I'm wondering, is there a correlation between, does ASA have a good year when we have a good year, and then what are the variables, and are there things that we can do to help ourselves have higher numbers?
It's almost pretty much one-to-one correspondence in some cities. I mean, I think they'll do okay in Chicago, but like we did great in New York City, they'll do great in New York City. San Francisco, there are certain cities that are really draws. So I would say if we were going to be in New York City, we might do the same numbers. Because
anything beyond the city?
I personally don't think so. I think the city, because a lot of people use this, you know, to, they save their departmental funding, you know, to go to great cities. And then I think, you know, being on the program, you know, I did look into that. We'll be meeting with permanent organization and strategic planning committee tomorrow because, you know, we always have these discussions. You know, you really need the high numbers to cover because, you know, when you look at what we charge, I mean, if you pre-register graduate students, underemployed, unemployed, $60 for a conference, and then we charge professionals $175. When you get on site, the rate goes up to $200 for professionals, but only goes up to $70. You know, from the other categories. So it's just something that I think, honestly, with social media, I mean, Douglas has tried really hard, you know, to put more and more information out there. I mean, we try to do pictures, but I mean, when you look at the high numbers, it's you look at the number of people on the program. So it's a correlation.
How did we do it in Philly last time? Because Philly might be an interesting test. But
we did.
It was a long time ago.
We were there 2005. We were at 642.
I kind of remember that people complain about Las Vegas like more than any. It was like, it wasn't the conference, it was like the city.
Yeah.
Can't believe we had to go through the casino to get to the thing or whatever.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, we still make a profit on that meeting.
So
I have one other question about the numbers. So you said that 24 people got removed from the program this year. How does that compare with the earlier date? So how does that compare to other years?
Well, with the policy, I think now that we have a policy, it's a policy. It's been approved by the board, so I can enforce it.
Yeah.
Previously, I would submit the names to the program chair, co-chairs, you know, so that they were involved in that decision making. Not that I mean, granted, David and Bond and I, we have communicated, we have had great communication, but when there's a policy, you can enforce that to where previous years there was more leniency. And, you know, what a policy from many years ago is I would keep track of that person, and then the following year, if they applied to be on the program and didn't pay, I would, you know, send them sort of a threatening, if you will, email, but that never worked. You know, so there were always people on the program that didn't register, but this year, I mean, we truly enforced that policy.
Got you.
So, I mean, again, you know, I think it, then there's always a conversation of quality of sessions. You know, I mean, some of our sessions, you know, these are first time presenters. You're either going to, as a board, have to decide if we want high numbers or if we want to restrict the number of program participants and have higher quality of sessions. Not all sessions, but, you know, some sessions. And there still is always this conversation of critical dialogues, and David and Bobna will be touching on that. But, you know, it's interesting. You know, I'm very pleased with the numbers because, you know, again, people were just making comments last year that, you know, the lateness, so it didn't affect us at all.
But also people have to choose to, in terms of department monies, all those things, just to add to that. For example, this year, my daughter was in a serious hit and run in Atlanta. On top of all these other things, my daughter was in a serious hit and run in Atlanta. So on top of all those expenses and then doing this, you also can't attend ASA. So people tend to pick based on what they think they're going to get more out of. So I think we did really well in terms of how we were going to do it this year. You know, although I do think some people might grumble a little after, maybe don't hate me. We're 20 minutes away from the Palmer House. But I found out in the cab, $5, so I'm okay now.
You know, but that, you know, that's also another, you know, the hotel that's directly across the street from the Palmer House. I mean, they wanted our business. Had we signed with them, we would have had to find an alternate site. I mean, they just didn't have the meeting space. And that, you know, there are so many factors that go into, you know, when we send out a request for proposal, which we just, because we'll be going back to New York City in 2019. So Hector and I will be conducting that site visit in October. And so we work with Marissa Crane at Winhams Briscoe. So she sends out the request for proposal. Well, in there it details out, I'm requesting 15 breakouts just, you know, to accommodate this size program. And so what we find is, yes, there are a lot of hotels, but they don't have that much meeting space. And
Philadelphia was good, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Very few.
Yeah. And then there's also, you know, the hotels have formulas too. So it's not only the amount of meeting space you request, but also what your sleeping room forecast is. And as long as they can ensure us a low room rate, you know, I can increase our numbers. But again, you want to not be in a position where you pay a penalty for not reaching those numbers.
Right.
And so there's just so many different clauses that you have to be mindful of. But what, you know, there's just not that many hotels that have that much meeting space. Now, of course, there are ASA takes, you know, the larger conferences. And there's something to be said about being the only group in-house. I mean, I know, you know, some years we're able to have that, and other years we're not. Next year we will not be the only group in the house. But, you know, it's just so hard to determine. And a lot depends. We book 3.5 years in advance, which gives us, you know, you would think an advantage, but, you know, some groups book 5+ years in advance, and then there are other sociological groups that, you know, and reduce amount of time. And so it's just...
So our schedule is always in sync, and I think this, but I want to make sure I'm right, with ASA. So we kind of follow them.
We always follow them.
Okay.
And we do a 2-day overlap. Like tomorrow will be the first day of Triple SP, and ASA doesn't start
until Friday.
Saturday. Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to say I think you guys are amazing. I mean, really, the work that you're doing, it just...
Thank you. I mean, I'll be honest, I love negotiating hotel
contracts. Yeah.
Well, let me say this to you. I came and I was sitting and, you know, and I said, well, I'm going to ask that question. I never got a chance. Michelle was asking, what about this and what about that and how does this move? So she's really good at that. In fact, that might be something that one day, David, they can offer a workshop on, because in truth, a lot of folks don't know how to do this. And this is something that you could really add in the long run. Because this morning, when I saw those 100 and
130 some pages.
Yeah, I mean, so keep that in mind too, as part of some of the things that we might want to do.
Yeah, one of the ways this works out well for us too is that when I started going, right, like the middle of October, it's one of the things that become readily apparent to people we're talking to at the whole town is that we know what we're doing, especially the Sheena, which is there. So that saves us a lot of time, you know, a lot of games and things like that. It becomes very, you know, very quickly, immediately, that, you know, not to play games, it's just be really upfront about things. I noticed that very quickly, it's very good. You know, and also when Marissa goes, because Marissa's going with us more often. So on top of that, we have Marissa from Health and First Hand. And she, what she has also is that she has so many contacts with a lot of people she also knows, I think, personally too, right? But Michelle really is very impressive in those situations that, you know, they know right away that, you know, this
don't
is,
play.
Yeah, just well, not play, just be very upfront. That's really cool. And I've learned a lot, I mean, and there's so much more about hotels now, you know, just in the last 3 or 4 years, right, just from being part of that, you know.
Michelle, how much was the fact that this is a new hotel? How much did that factor into your being able to get that contract?
I think it did play into that. You know, they didn't open until November 1st of 2011. So, I mean, and they were eager to get business. But then, again, we looked at, when it came down, it was between this property and...
I mean, one of the things we try to do is we try to get a union property.
I know that, but
in this particular case, there was a union property, right, in this hotel. But when you came down to it and you compared the two packages, it was just, you know, we couldn't go with the union property. Because normally, even if the non-union property is better in some ways, we still may go with the union property, right, or we might recommend it. But the difference was great in this case, and I agree with Michelle. I think the fact that they were just opening, I think was an incentive for them to kind of, you know, to get the business. And because so much of this also has to do with word of mouth, right? With word of mouth, too.
Right.
You know.
Because I certainly will tell.
Yeah, and let me add something very quickly too that's really very important, I think, for the organization. And some of you may know this already. It actually started with Las Vegas. In Las Vegas, we had to switch at the last moment, right?
Right.
And so we were able to do it, right? Because we were told, you know, in December, we're told that, you know, ASA is not going. And in January, we were in Las Vegas looking at property, right? And using Helms Briscoe. A number of organizations contacted us, right? The Association of Black Sociologists and a number of other organizations. They were like, what are we going to do? And so we put them in touch with Helms Briscoe and with Marissa. So we generated business for them, but at the same time, a lot of goodwill between SSSP and these organizations because we, in effect, sort of bailed them out. And we also, it wasn't just passed along, we were in contact with them, right, helping them. So that's the other thing that I think worked out, that I think the SSSP has a good reputation among a lot of other organizations as an organization that's prepared to help them when they need help. So that was the other nice thing.
I have to say that. Although, since I've been here for more than a day, and have talked to everybody, this is close to a LEED built property in the sense that all the materials are recycled, which is really important. And their staff is incredibly diverse.
A woman or
yeah.
Incredibly diverse and extraordinarily friendly. So,
I paid attention to that because at first when I heard it wasn't a union property, I was bad.
Right, and so
it's not a union property.
I was looking at it too because it wasn't a union property.
Yeah, it's been good. It's been really good.
Yeah.
This is the one exception. I mean, the last two, the next two are all union, right? This is the one exception. But as you can see, in many ways, it's very exceptional.
We'll subvert them. Yes. We'll subvert them.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, I mean, you know, I've never heard such a positive conversation from the board
been around the hotel, and so and I'm sure that a lot of it has to do, we can attribute to great negotiation, but it seems also to structurally this place has built that in. And I'm just wondering if there's a way that we can publicly acknowledge that. And I don't know whether it's through a resolution or I don't know whether it's through something, but it seems like if we're really, if we're looking at this place as a model for, building out of environmentally friendly construction material and all that, and being flexible, if we're looking at that as a model for what hotels could do and as a place that we would do business, I'm just wondering whether we can publicly commend them in some way. I don't know how to do that without sounding like we're lobbying for a corporation.
It's true. When I came to the front of this hotel, I looked at my husband and I said, is this really the hotel we're staying in?
I mean, I guess we could all get up on Yelp and do, social media, but it'd be nice if we could do it in a more formal way.
You just reminded me of something, though, that I think it's important for you to know. At the time, also, one of the things that we did when it is a non-union hotel, and it's a little related to this, is one of the things that I always do is I contact the local. Right, who normally organize to see if they had tried to organize. Right, so we had been told that they tried to organize with Radisson Blu, and they were very anti-union, waged a very aggressive campaign. I don't know if we would have recommended, right? But the thing is, they hadn't even attempted to organize, right? And so, if we do something like what you said, and we agreed to do something like that, first I want to go back and just make sure that there wasn't an attempt since. Because we don't want to sing its praises if, in fact, engaged in a union-busting campaign, let's say, right? That would be my only proviso.
Right, and I don't know what Radisson, I don't know whether, Radisson must have a variety, I don't know what their conglomeration looks like, I don't know what their portfolio looks like, I have no idea whether they have other Radissons that are awful and we don't want to support the Radisson corporation. Yeah. I don't know, it just seems like we've all been to these meetings and we've all sat at these meetings and we don't even have this.
Okay, there's no report, there's no action. So
I have no action items in my report this year.
I move that we accept Michelle's report.
Second.
Any discussion? All right, report accepted. All right. Okay, do we...
Could we back up, please, because we didn't approve some of the previous reports. So I just
have
to have that in there. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
for example, the first one would be the report of the BFA.
We technically never
voted on that.
I thought we did.
Yeah, in fact, Claire did it herself, actually.
Yeah, Claire did everything. Right, she did it.
I noted that we approved the... not the report, but the revised budget and the annual audit.
Yeah.
Not the actual report itself.
Okay.
And I have a point of clarification. When there's a report, I thought that was the committee that had. I don't think you need to bring a motion to accept it. I think that the committee has brought it. You just have to second that. But I don't know if that's the case.
Well, I think the only thing about the reports is if there's action. That's why I have it here. If there's action, if the report requires some kind of action, that's usually when we do some kind of vote. Like in yours, there was no action required, so we could actually have accepted that by acclamation. In Hector's, you didn't have,
no action.
I was going to say, you didn't have any. So we could just really go ahead on and accept that one. Susan, we did you right, didn't we?
Yes.
All right, I didn't want to mess up. That was how I asked, right? All right, and then I think the same with Claire. So if it's easier for somebody, all she did was present an amended budget, which she did everything for. So actually, we're pretty much okay, not unless you think there's something I missed.
Well, I'm just not that we have to do it the same way every year, but in past years, basically, when somebody gives a report, the board accepts their report.
Okay, second. Okay, hold on. I'm not supposed to second anything, John.
Yes.
All right, there we go.
It would be the report of the executive officer.
Okay. Who wants to move that?
I move that we accept the board of the executive.
All right.
Any Any questions? Any abstentions? Done.
And then, you know, last year we approved the report from the UTK project director. So we could do that one again, too.
The report of what?
UTK project director. That's the letter from John Scheffner regarding the funding of the graduate student.
So we're just approving that we accept
the report.
Mm-hmm. You got it.
So somebody.
Do we accept the report of John Scheffner?
Thank you.
Any questions? Any abstentions? Motion carries. All right.
Thank you.
Welcome. We're okay?
Yep.
All right. How many minutes do we have?
Do you teach a breakdown maybe?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Well, I do present the scholar choice.
Okay.
And again, it's very brief.
Okay.
I just want to say that this is, we worked with this company for a number of years. Basically, they do not charge a fee for their services. They're very easy to work with. We, you know, publish, encourage our members to recommend books to their publishers that they advertise with the scholar's choice. In addition, they reach out to all the C. Wright Mills finalist publishing companies to get complimentary copies, if, you know, available. This year, one publisher refused to do so, and we purchased that.
University of
California.
Haven't they published more?
I really don't know. I bought that book a long time ago. Well, last year there were two books we had to purchase, so at least this year there's only one. And then they donate a copy of the winning book to the organization, and they also supply me with a list of the publishers who will be displaying, and then I go after them for advertising. And so they, all they ask in return is that they be placed in a very popular place with them, so they're directly with registration. So, I mean, they've been very easy to work with, and we promote them, and hopefully they will continue to want to partner with us in the future.
Okay. All right. Does anybody want to move that we accept this report?
And this is a scholarship.
Anybody want a second? Any questions? Abstentions?
I'll abstain.
All right, but as it stands, the report is accepted. We can move on. Thank you. All right, how many minutes do we have for a break?
I think we could take a 20-minute break.
Oh, my goodness.
And registration doesn't officially open until 2, but if you go on down, I'm sure saying that. So feel free to break up. Yes.
All right, I guess I can. Can we leave our computers in here?
I think somebody will be.
Yeah. All right, let me see if I can put mine on. All right, I'll just like this. I'll have to hurry
up. Even reviewed it. Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, it says like, and then we have separate things for action. So if there's a
reconciliation.
She's doing a lot better. In fact, my other sister was there with her. We had sent her to Atlanta. She said she wanted to come back and do my sister in Atlanta.
Did I tell you what
happened?
The
other sister, yes.
You're a large family.
Yeah, we are.
Very large. And that's good. You definitely need.
Have we ever moved this quickly?
No.
All right. No, we're actually ahead of schedule, so we're taking a 20-minute break. So you feel free to have something to eat or drink, and have you seen Bob?
I have not, but I heard she was in the works.
Okay, perfect. She'll be here. So, yes, make yourself.
Do I have to do this first?
No, just find an open place, and that will be covered.
Okay. Right. So, I often suggest, they have counsel or a site, and I say, well, you know, they've missed this.
Yeah, that's what I say too. It's the first place I ever presented a
circle. It's very young. So I think that's a silly
way. And I wasn't social. I mean, 40 years ago in my life, I wasn't socialized. It seemed to me always that if a paper wasn't published, it was And so I would get a paper separately, and then I would present it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of thing.
Okay.
So,
no, we were.
No, I went to ASA only because I lived in New Haven and went to school at NYU because Yale had no Jewish faculty and was anti-Semitic, so I couldn't go there. And so I went to NYU, but because of Steve Warner at Yale, I used to go to the ASA meetings, the Gillespie meetings, and the Easter meetings when I was a graduate student. But I didn't necessarily present papers. I was always the person from the audience who asked these questions. Well,
we had this rule that if you wanted to get some funding,
at that time, NYU was mostly for students who wanted their masters for teaching. And then there are about 10 of us. And then there are about five of us a year. Oh, no, I have to tell you, the prestige has gone up, partly because we have, you'd be surprised who went to NYU and I went to NYU and where they are in the profession now. But the faculty didn't publish as much, but the faculty was spectacular. I mean, Richard Sennett, for example, Erwin Spiegel, I was his assistant, Patricia Kios Sexton, so I got to know Brendan, and I got to go to the UAW Labor Education Center one summer, and Vanderbilt does an undergraduate student paper conference every year.
And they give departments money to get their undergraduates into papers. But at the time, and the students, they loved
this. This is something that's a big deal. I mean, it's partly institutional, like UCI in the last 10 years, at least, has research papers. So this is, we have a big.
Yeah, but this, you see, what was this?
This is
17 years ago.
Yeah, this is before some.
Yeah, it's interesting because at the time, everything I told them in studies, the dean said no. And so I just never met with the dean. I really didn't. I didn't meet the dean for 20 years. And then one of my colleagues in American Studies wanted to hire someone. Well, thank you so much. I feel so spoiled.
It was supposed to be waiting.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Enjoy.
I am.
It's all social construction.
Because I feel I really do think that it's easier to study a bunch of documents or, you know, images than to go out and collect data. Really?
There's some, there's no CCL, right? Like the monitoring and
Right, like his friends at Penn.
So, I mean, actually, some of the people, you know, sort of, but it's very strange. So, yeah, now we're going to have a bunch of screwed up characters who are excited, but some of them do good work, some of them work hard. But it's mostly us from the money costs.
Right. And they're here.
Oh, yeah.
After I got the dissertation grants, and there's one good thing that I was taught is how to write grant application. And then I was taught money for 9 years to do any research. And that's where gender was a nice issue to get both private and public funds from. And, and I got an NSF grant to do actually medical research on it.
Trust me.
they love the verbal, you know, and especially when you have good things to say. So, all right. Thank you for coming in. Yes, just get a, if there's, I believe, Heather, is this seat beside you?
Yes, okay. This says Nancy Hunt.
May I get your signature real quick?
Yes.
You're my overflow territory.
And what you're signing is with Sue from stepping down, we're moving all of these down. We're moving her name and adding Pat Donnelly. And I just want to make sure that is the thing on the other places. So,
so I direct Mansfield Institute for Social Justice.
Oh, thank you. In here, it's, let's see, is that the rooms? It's just your last name and your room number. Is it not ready yet? Okay, there's an additional, there's another for just the meeting.
Meeting bypass? Or Radisson meeting?
Radisson meeting.
Okay.
And then you just connect.
Thank you. Well, we didn't get a room because we just got here. Julia's sitting in the lobby. So I just went to look for her and I didn't see her. And then I sent her a text and said, did you check in? And she said, no, I'm still in the lobby. Like, I didn't see her. Anyway, they said by 3, so. Usually they'll just let you take the room, but I guess they don't have it ready.
Didn't even recognize you. There was another person here.
That's cool.
Probably.
Layers.
You're traveling is fun, and
sociology.
We all get it.
Social justice. I've been like learning all this stuff like over the summer, and I'm trying to read like the, you know, the philosophies of how to do advising and stuff, and then you know, I have to learn all of the computer system and all that stuff too. But I was nominated to be the chairman of the department, and I was like, I'm not interested in that. And then at the same time, my advisor, we have one person.
There's a
packet
for
that
list?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you probably have lots of
Well, we're social justice. We're actually a criminal justice.
Oh, there is.
But they're like, they figure out political science. More like the Justice Administration. It's really not as interesting for us social justice students. But anyway.
How many majors do you have? You'll be advising.
Well, actually, one of them right now is like 200.
Well,
so that's the reason we have one person that's advising for all of us, including grads. Oh, we have 1,000.
Oh, wow.
And then we have about 80 and graduates.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So, Susan Standish does our staff. She has a master's degree.
Well, you know, that's the funny thing is that I now, like, there's different models, right? Like, I'm grateful that we don't do the thing where, like, everybody gets a certain number.
Yeah, everybody gets 30.
People who really pay attention take care of it. And the rest of the students get shot. And so I think this way you have sort of like one person who does it and four and a professional might be better. I think there's actually, I've been reading books on. There's journals and books on advising and stuff, and I'm actually figuring out that I think that there's something important about the matter to develop the student as well as, you know, kind of trying to. Well, there's the human side, you know, it's like, okay, I'm concerned about your, what you want to learn and what you want to do with your future and stuff, but then there's also, like, sort of diagnosing me in some way. Like, oh, it sounds like this person needs to talk to a financial aid officer. This person needs to talk to the learning disabilities office. You know, like, what? And I know, you know, since I've been there for a while, you know, the institution, you know what resources are out there. You kind of like act like a traffic cop, do they say? And then in terms of what I actually do, I completed your degree and stuff, and that stuff is sort of like no brainer. Because I really need to read the bulletin. That's the program. I can sign off like it's a dozen. But it's still important because if somebody's got
it. This is just not that hard. I mean, we internally do it with academy.
Yeah, for sure. Especially grad students, I'm
right.
Sure.
Well, grad students, she doesn't do much except be sure that they do everything they need to do in terms of grad college. On track in terms of that, and I don't have to worry about that. But in terms of actually mentoring and all that, but even undergrad,
Oh, God, you got, I didn't even get a session organizer one. That's good.
Well, I'm only going to put a couple of important ones on there. This one.
Oh, God. I put the password in.
This one, So if Bernie Sanders got elected, it would be like having Bob Parish as the president of the United States. He's like from New York, kind of like same similar age. I think that even Bob's a little older than Bernie Sanders, but like it's sort of like it's almost like listening to a sociology professor.
Not like the rest.
This stuff that Bernie Sanders talks about comes up with a plan to fix America. It's like exactly like what Appalachia or any of the things could probably say.
Well, I wonder, how is Hillary going to do now? The stuff keeps getting worse about the service stuff.
It's the same old.
But
just trying to do it.
I know. But we'll see, but a lot of students on my campus have started to support Bernie Sanders. And so I think she's an old hippie. She's a transplanted New Yorker to Vermont. But I love him anyway. I gave him money just because I know he's out there. I gave him money. Well, I'm going to hear him. I'm going to hear him. I'm just not going to.
Actually, that guy is the probably the first time anybody who has even snowball's chance has spoken anything about the type of America that I would like to live in.
There you go. I mean, I think I have never thought that we had it like that. Never did.
No?
So I think Bernie, if he keeps going, he'll have a good chance. I have no money with that daughter in my life.
If he gets elected, though, he's going to hit gridlock even more than Obama.
Well, maybe he's been around. Well, I think Obama actually tried to work with him.
Yeah.
If Hillary had gotten elected instead of Obama in, 8 or 7 years ago, I think she would always be set up with him. Like, from when she tried to do health care,
But I think she's going to be strong.
And are you sure
he has got a leather for skin. Because he can't get that. You can just sit there and go,
they wouldn't have been able to take it. Like that.
No, I mean, you know, you've seen the show Key and Peele. Mm-hmm. They have the
alter ego.
They have the anger interpreter. Mm-hmm. They basically have. It's like they have a guy who he's pretty good at doing Obama too. He comes home and he's like, and she's like, "Oh, calling your interpreter."
Like, then he goes crazy.
Yeah, but she had an interpreter too.
So it's just interesting. This is going to happen, but I think Hillary will have to run for the moment. He gets in because he's attractive. She's going to get the numbers. She's a big girl. 21.
He's here Saturday?
He's here Saturday.
In Chicago or at?
I think what?
He should come down here to Bruce. The ASA and the Triple XP are like those people. He was supposed to be the first black president.
Yes.
He has a news conference. And they ask him questions, and ultimately somebody asks a question about his mom or something. Like,
don't you talk about my mom. that's the way you can do it. And what
I would recommend, there's a show on Comedy Central, it's called, the guys were called Key and Peele, it's their names. And they have, they did a lot of stuff contemporary America. One of them was like, he would be like translating what Obama is saying to like white black people, like Chow. You know, it's like talking about something like that.
Oh man. So it's gonna be
where's your church at?
Is it? My church is on it's on you know Dayton, so it's on Salem. And go up Salem to we turn across Cornell. It's the old United Seminary building. So we bought the chapel there. So that's where our church is. We're small. We're not a mega church. We're just a good amount of people. I think we've got about 300 members who come regularly.
Is anybody, do you think you can have anybody interested in doing prison ministry? Because I've got, I do a prison ministry at Warren Correctional.
Uh-huh, where's that at?
Lebanon. You know where the, you know, you go down I-75 with that exit where that church is?
The Solid Rock. The Solid Rock. Solid Rock Church.
Well, yeah, Solid Rock. Anyway, it was, it's right off that exit.
Okay, yeah.
There's two prisons there, Lebanon and Warren. But we have like a men's group. We have men's group. It's called Orthodox, Catholic, all sorts of Protestants, Pentecostal, everybody just like puts all the differences aside.
Okay.
In fact, we have this training of like to say like, you know, you guys don't do this, and right. Others, you know, we don't do altar calls, we don't lay on hands, we don't speak in tongues, we don't do the rosary.
We'll love that.
And it's all is like, what do? We go to the prison and serve. So we have women who go to UCI,
uh-huh.
And we have women who
This is our minister, William E. Harris, Jr., and we're believers, Christians, Fellowship Church, and we have a website.
Okay.
And so you can just send him... an email through that and mention my name.
Okay.
And then ask him about that because we do a lot of that. I know, Susan, for me to be a hard rock, I'm a church goer. You should see me on Sunday. I cry. Sit there. I know. You know, but at the same time, I'm a bad church goer. You know what I'm saying? Because I believe in all the New Age stuff. But our church is set up so that it's open to anybody. Everybody, all the requirements that we believe. We don't try to tell you how to live your life like you said. We have women who are part of our ministry.
Okay.
We have all of that. We now have decided that we have several people in our neighborhood that were the churches that are gay. We're now opening them to more fully to gay and lesbian members. And some of the older members are just staying there. You know, we thought we would have some problem with them.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, so I would never go to another Baptist church. I mean, that would have been a mainstay for me. I mean, I've been at that same church for 20 years. 20 years. And it's getting, you know, I think we're attracting more and more people because we now are on the radio talking about how we're open and there's no... So it's really, really good. I mean, I have a lot of respect for the older people because they do our HIV ministry. They go down, they meet with the people, they bring extra food because you know how all of the restrictions are.
I'm wondering, is it ready for some time for us to start?
You think so? I think almost everybody's here. All these badges except for me.
See, they only gave me.
And then they gave me a passport. They don't give me organized session.
Well, are you doing that stuff?
Yes, I'm doing some of it. Don't worry about it. Sure. I don't want them to look at me so much.
Yeah, that's
it.
Yeah.
That's it.
All right.
That's our church.
I'll look them up.
That's
right,
our church. From D.C. So you see he's young. Okay. And we just bought this building. So you can see. It's a former basketball court. So. And that's the old building we're getting ready to put a new web page up. So just send them a note.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. You know, there's another church too that would be interested, Omega Baptist, and that minister's name is Daryl Schwartz. I'm just going to move you for a second and steal some of these things. I'll put them out here so we can cheat together. You know, my students always think it's so funny because they always try to ask me.
Oh, okay, I see. We're over on the west side there.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's not on the bad side of the west side. We're on Salem, really close to the historic area over there where that, I forget the name of the area where people lived at. The Salem Triangle or Dayton Triangle, which still integrated, heavily integrated. It's in good shape. Everybody's getting over there.
I was just over at the Dayton Art Museum maybe a couple months ago.
That's around the corner from me.
Oh, yeah?
Here's my address.
They have this thing downstairs, especially exhibit. The person had taken the last meals of all the people who were executed in the United States since 1976 or 7. Mm-hmm. And like, taken a plate underneath it, like what they ate, and then like, you know, what the list of what they ate. The plates just cover. Down at the end, they have two plates. These are like two men who have been on death row and been exhausted and released. And it was what they ate when they got released. One guy was like 4 months or something.
They have some editing. I forget you're down there at Miami, right?
Yeah.
With Rodney Coates.
Yeah, Rodney's not in my department anymore. So
it's a Black World Studies.
He's the director of Black World Studies.
But I'm at 122 West McPherson. So, and you can come up, send me an email, okay. And I'll just come outside and meet you because on my street, I'm right around the corner from the Institute. And it's a historic building. It's an old historic neighborhood, and I have a porch, an old-fashioned porch that's kind of up the stairs in the city, but it looks like New York City still.
Cool.
So just send an email when you're coming. You got your address. I'm not very far from the church. I mean, I don't want to go down to Beaver Creek near the university.
Yeah.
It's too far, but I like living in the city because I can get to different places. I mean, Clifton. And University of Dayton is not very far from where I live.
Right.
You know, really close. If Claire ever comes back there, I doubt if she will.
I don't know.
Probably not. So, I know she said,
well, I mean, I do say that
her husband is retired, you know, and his son is son.
I mean, obviously,
it's limited. A whole different thing, but I think you might have heard me saying that our provost advised
something. Yeah, well,
it's going to be a big deal. It's going to hit the Chronicle.
So, does Miami University in some way have something to do with like the founding of Wright State?
Yes.
Because like when you go on the Wright State campus, the buildings, some of them have the same names as the ones
they
on
do.
The Miami campus.
We were built by Miami and. Ohio State, we kind of, the combination of the two. And so they helped us to put all the things together and we had some of the same buildings and stuff like that. So that's how that came into being. It's old. It started out with two campuses. And it'll be 50 years old. But it never was like that before. They literally have pictures where it started out as two buildings. And everything else is cornfield.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they've done really well in terms of the school. I think the students that you see, they knew they could do better. Some of the students aren't that bright. Yeah. Okay, can we start yet?
Miami's always on.
Okay. We have, can we get started here? The next report we're going to have is from Nancy Michaels. Ready?
Yeah.
All right.
So I'm here to talk about the local arrangements committee. And this has really been a fun experience and an interesting one for myself and the committee members, Julie Holvers and Casey Hendrick. They're not here today. Over the next couple of days. So the process started back in, I think, December when we released, and Michelle and I met, and we had a couple wonderful meetings, one with just the three of us, and then one with Casey and Julie. And we talked about some really interesting tour ideas that I had outlined for the group. And then I think it was you, Marlies, who thought maybe we should merge with ASA and kind of combine our efforts. And we sent them a list of tours, and they loved them. And Marlies did a little bit of finagling, and that's how the tours ended up kind of merging with ASA. So we're sharing those together. And then I wrote the Welcome to the City guide. And I don't know if anyone's read it, but I wrote it on a really cold winter day because it was due. So I did explain it's actually the day that event where they call it the polar plunge. It was an amazing event for Special Olympics. So yeah, we talked about that a little bit, but also did what their weather would be like now, and exactly as I described it probably so. But a little bit also in that Welcome to the City letter, I highlighted some of the places that really describe the neighborhoods of Chicago, really what brings out the culture and the history of Chicago, you know, much, much deeper than the Magnificent Mile or some of the other things you'll read about in a really generic tour guide. So I'm hoping that was helpful. And then as far as conference materials go, we worked on a dining guide. And at the beginning of writing this, I'm like, well, there's so many listings, you know, you can go to all these dining guides, there are links everywhere in Chicago. And then, you know, looking at them, they're also very generic, and they don't highlight the neighborhoods, the history, the culture as much. And I think the dining in Chicago really does bring out that culture. So we chose instead to really, the three of us, work on it together. And choose the ones that we felt were broad enough for this audience, but also places that you really will experience, again, the culture here in Chicago. So we also added some links to some local dining guides, but we chose to stay away from the Zabbits of the world, where there may not be local people who are actually writing those guides. So we hope that everyone enjoyed that. We each added our three favorites to that guide as well. Let's see. We did send a list of academics around the Chicagoland area to Michelle. That was quite a while ago. I can't even remember when that happened.
My fault.
In the fall, right. For promotion purposes and for invitations. And then as far as the press release goes, and this kind of leads into some action items and suggestions, there's an abridged version of the press release, and there's an extended version. And just knowing the press and sort of what they expect, I think maybe for next year you may want to consider just the abridged version. I don't necessarily think that they would even put out the lengthier version. But there are both. Another thing that we really enjoyed, and we talked about this in our original meeting, was we set up a session with some local youth organizers who are going to speak tomorrow about the creative ways that they message about all that's going on, all the social justice issues that have been happening in the country, and certainly here in Chicago. And these are some young people that we work with through the Manfield Institute at Roosevelt University that are doing incredible work. And so they will come tomorrow at 2:30 and at, I think it's 2:30 to 4:10, and sort of talk about their creative brand organizing and some of the actions that they've been involved in. So one of the groups is We Charge Genocide, and actually the whole idea for We Charge Genocide started at a hearing with young people at Roosevelt University, sponsored by the Mandel Institute. So they all went to Geneva last November and reported on police violence as a human rights issue. And they're going to talk about that tomorrow in the session as well. So really exciting stuff. We also have some young people that will be connected to SSSP that will be coming and performing at the welcome reception tomorrow evening on their spoken word as a way, to message about these issues. So as far as another action item, I would say would be really calling upon the local arrangements committee to connect with organizers and then connect these organizers to SSSP to add to the local flavor of what's going on here. I think that that's just an airplane ride over our work, but if you have any questions or suggestions.
So your action items are actually recommendations for the next local arrangement chair. So I'm wondering how we would handle that, because I don't think we could really...
The press release we could, because that is in the contract. That, okay. You know, instead of having the two versions, we could just do an advanced version. That's great, y'all, of course.
So if somebody would put in a motion regarding the press release, you know, your recommendation be made as a motion and second it, then we can move on. You can move.
Do I?
Yeah, you can even do it yourself.
To just stick with the abridged version versus the extended version of the press release.
Anybody want a second?
Well, she can't actually make a...
She could make her own motion, but anybody could.
She can.
She can. Does anybody want to second it? Yeah.
I'll second.
Okay. Now, any discussion? Ready for the vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody against? Abstention? Vote carried. Thank you. Now, the next item recommendation you have. The next recommendation you said too.
So the other recommendation, and this would, as Michelle just said, might change the contract, so I'm not sure if it makes sense, is really to involve the local arrangements committee in helping to bring sort of local, connect with local activists to SSSP. Maybe even outlining some of the actions that are going on during the conference and listing those in addition to the tours. So I think they would be of interest. They're really exciting actions that are happening in Chicago really every week. So I thought that might be of interest. I don't know if it falls too outside of typically what happens.
Yeah, I've never seen that, but we would have to know what's going on actually in Seattle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
But the way you're proposing would be almost a permanent amendment to the contract.
Right.
And so that would affect anybody who would be the local arrangements chair. So it's regardless of location, happen anywhere.
Well, yeah.
That would be the problem, possibly, because that's assuming then that committee, that chair is going to be able to have the time to do all that. So you're basically mandating them to do that when you change the language, right?
Well, I agree, and I was going to finish, and I thank you for adding that. All I was going to say is that we'll pass that recommendation on actually in that report, and I don't know what we can do with it, because in some ways it's not an actionable item based on the changing of things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There might be one way where we could get the spirit, proposing that still falls in line with something we sort of already do, and that's the Thomas Hood Award, Social Action Award, and that's a call to membership to propose an organization in the city where we're holding the meeting and recognize them and present them with an award. But it seems that we could have a whole list of those that are presented to some extent before we actually pick a winner. And when people submit those nominations, they usually have a brief description of why they're submitting it. And that seems to me one way that you can make that process a little more transparent. Everyone gets to see who all was considered, find out a little bit about them, and that could be something on the website until the winner is picked.
That might be a way to do that.
The question I would have is how many organizations are nominated?
Yeah,
this year, because I was on that committee, it was really difficult because they were all amazing, and I think there were 17.
That's really impressive.
And we had to number them, all of them. So it was a process.
That might be something, I guess, the way we're thinking about it, maybe we could discuss it maybe on your new business or something, and somebody could bring it up. But I agree with Anna right now, there's really nothing we can do with that until we think it through a little more, because as you're saying, with 17 different groups and organizations, it's going to be. Right, so we might have to think about that one.
Although I think 17 is high. I've been on the Social Action Committee, and I think the norm is like 6 or 7.
Maybe it was 17.
Yeah, Chicago is a very active.
Right.
Yeah, but so is Seattle.
David?
Just a thought on this. I mean, I don't know about changing operations manuals and contracts and all that, but it seems to me a suggestion to the local arrangements committee to explore the idea that maybe there might be some actions, we could have a meeting and people might be interested in that. That seems like a very good suggestion to me to the local arrangements committees, whether or not that's written in somewhere and said, must do this, it's just a good suggestion. That may be something that people, they might not think of it, but that's a good idea, I think.
My only question, I agree it's a good suggestion, and I think it's, rather than writing it in stone, it's good as a suggestion to pass on. I'm just wondering formally and institutionally how that happens, because I don't know that a lot of people go back and reread minutes, and I don't know that they go back and reread suggestions, so, I would be willing to make some motion to support, I don't even know that we need to, but somewhere say that from year to year, when the chair of this committee has recommendations like this, that we encourage them to share that with the next chair, what's the institutional mechanism to get that word down the line, rather than burying it in our...
I always pass on, Nancy's report will go to next year, Sarah,
okay.
The local arrangements can always share that, the history is posted of all committee reports.
But it's just the previous reports. So they don't, yes, so they could. If somebody was really diligent, they could go back and find it. Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, they have a separate contract. Of duties that the local arrangements chair has to meet. So, while I share Nancy's report, it's not detailed in their contract.
Right, no, I understand that. I'm not suggesting that it should be. This is just a general question. In some ways, it's a larger question. Is how do we, and those of us who have been on the board for a long time know that we sometimes have the same, it's like Groundhog Day, sometimes we have the same conversations over and over again, because there are some people with institutional history, but there aren't, that they're not necessarily the people that are chairing divisions or chairing committees. I don't know what the formal if there is a formal mechanism, and I'm certainly not suggesting we put that on the shelf, but I just don't know how we can.
I think there's two issues here, though, right? So I'm responsible for next year, and they're going to meet, and they're gonna, this report get passed on, so it's fine. So it's for me, it's that. But it seems like it's kind of a good idea in general to kind of suggest to people. I'm thinking of these games of passing information. Eventually, it might disappear. This particular suggestion, you can go to us links to the network, So maybe it should be written down somewhere.
Ronnie, Anna.
I would like to propose as new business the consideration, the new business on Sunday, the consideration that the Social Action Committee and the chair of the local committee